Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, you say you got a lot on your chest, a lot in the brain, a lot in the heart. Where do you want to get started?
I want to start off with my ears. Do you ever find that certain purchases you know you would really like, but they're expensive, and so you try to talk yourself out of it? And do you find there's a weird, almost arbitrary standard for what you think you should spend a lot of money for and what you shouldn't?
Yes, 100%.
So my ears, I'm having this with headphones right now. I love music and I love sound, but I have shitty headphones. Because expensive headphones run into hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And that strikes me as insane. But at the same time, it's something expensive that would enhance the experience around something I love. And I don't know. I don't feel like it's cheapness. I feel like it's a philosophical disconnect. Because when we were growing up, there were no expensive headphones. So now it feels like a scam.
Yeah,
in the same way that jeans became designer jeans and all of a sudden they became $400 and we grew up and wore jeans because they weren't expensive.
You're right. You're not cheap. There are certain things. By the way, I'm the same way with headphones. Most of my headphones, and I mean, music doesn't have the same, really, I don't have the same relationship as you do, obviously, but you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts and things. Almost all of my headphones have come from Winners.
Right. It's almost like when you buy glasses from Shoppers, because you don't want to spend $250 on designer frames.
Yeah.
You can spend $30.
Yeah.
So it's weird though, because I realized I'm not sure there's rhyme or reason to it. I'm trying to figure out why. Expensive headphones. Oh, sorry. Someone's texting. I'm trying to figure out why expensive headphones would be so ridiculous to me, but an expensive meal wouldn't.
Well, I mean, God, I'm the same way. Like the meal and the wine, I'll always spend the money on. Headphones, I won't. Socks, underwear, t-shirts, running gear, all like pajamas. Let's see. Oh, bedding. I hear bedding is expensive. I haven't bought bedding stuff in ages. Yeah, there's lots of things.
Like, I don't even know how long underwear is supposed to last, because I get all my underwear at Winners, and I think they're cheap. I don't know. I've never explored, but is it sort of like umbrellas where you can get a $10 one or you can get the $100 one? I honestly don't know. But how long are they supposed to last?
I'm glad you brought up umbrellas, because the Open Championship is going on right now. Mm-hmm. Is there anything, and you always get the shot, you know, somewhere in England where it's rainy and windy and the umbrellas are rendered useless, but is there anything stupider than the small umbrella that fits like in the glove compartment of your car? Because it never works. If you use it when it's raining and it all windy, it will flip inside out and it now becomes a stabbing sword.
It's the weirdest thing, because it's like you buy it to throw it out.
Yes.
You know ahead of time this doesn't work, but to spend a little bit more money on something that does work seems ridiculous because you could get the cheap one.
I hate it. I hate the umbrella. But yeah, getting back to your point, here's how you know when the underwear... Okay, let me ask you this. What's the point when even you realize it's time to throw out the underwear? Like, does there have to be a new created hole for you to get rid of the underwear?
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like that's a very personal question, and socks work the same way. There's a tendency. It's almost like trying to not go to the gas station. Like, how much can I squeeze out of this tank of gas? You know, you're eventually going to have to go, but can I get one more trip? One more trip before I'm just on fumes. And it's almost like your personal stuff is the same way. Toothbrushes are like that too. How long can I use this toothbrush before I feel like I'm just brushing my teeth with, like, you know, the frayed tail of a cat?
Once again, I'm with you. Amy always gets upset. She's like, I destroy my toothbrushes. I'm an aggressive brusher, but it'll be like, I am. It would be like, you know, soft willows on a spring morning. That's the the how strong my toothbrush bristles are, and I still use it. I'm like, what? I'm gonna spend $230 on another toothbrush? This one's still good as I'm ordering $50 bottles of wine.
That's the weird thing too, is the disproportionate amount of time and energy that goes into saving something that costs $2.
I know, it's stupid.
It is stupid. All right, so I got Leafs questions, broader hockey questions, NBA finals. I got some Jays stuff I want to throw your way. Did you see the finale of Loki yet?
I haven't. I think I'm gonna. I've got the last two episodes. I'm looking forward to it tonight.
Okay, so I'll shelve those questions, but I do have some movie questions for you. Something I think you'll enjoy. So, you know, you're a good guy. You pick. Where do you want to go?
Well, I just did, actually, it's funny. I just did 4 hours of radio doing the morning show with Steve Simmons, which was a ton of fun. He's super easy to work with because he can go on and on, kind of like myself and you. Let's start with the Leafs.
Okay.
You know, I mean,
anywhere in particular?
When we're talking, I was going to do big picture, but let's focus it more. Biggest priority, Jack Campbell's partner or a replacement for Hyman?
Ooh, I would say Jack Campbell's partner, but that is a macro kind of observation. You know that I've deemed this, I have two goals this summer to communicate with the Leafs. One is Jack Campbell needs help. The second thing is next year is not their year. We're in a retooling phase. Mm-hmm. There were the rumors from Frank Saravelli about Darcy Kemper being high on the list for the Leafs. And then he listed about 17 other goalies. So, you know. But, you know, here's the thing. I want to be totally clear about this. I think the Leafs need goaltending help, but I would not say here's who they should go get, because people who make millions of dollars and have spent their lives trying to figure this out can't answer that question very often correctly. So I'm not going to pretend to say, yeah, Darcy Kemper's the guy because yada, 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 or Chris Drieger or this or that. All I'm saying is someone who can support Jack Campbell is what they need. So I would say that one. How about you?
You know, it's funny. You know what the Maple Leafs are with goaltenders? They're like us with toothbrush. They're just trying to go.
Sorry, but that was really good. They're trying to stretch out a cheap toothbrush.
Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, this Drieger, it's only $875,000. Lightly used. Yeah, well, let's bring that on board. No, I agree with you. It's goalie. It's 100% goalie. Jack Campbell, you know, no one questions his ability. He you know, performed at a very high level, you know, for all the time he played last year. We don't question his skill. We question his availability.
Yes, and what the cost could be. The Leafs are retooling right now, but getting a goalie that you feel could be in the same thinking that Lou had with Freddie Anderson, and for a while it seemed like a smart idea. If you can get a guy at a reasonable number that you think can be your guy for a bunch of years, fantastic. That's a huge thing you don't have to worry about. Yeah. If they think Kemper could be that guy, I mean, I know I think he's got 1 year left on his deal, but if you think he comes over, you can resign him. He's going to be your guy during what ultimately is your push for the cup. Awesome. That's a huge weight off your shoulders. The thing about the replacement for Hyman is I feel because we like Hyman so much, maybe we overestimate how hard it will be to replace him. He's a player with good offensive skills who works really hard and adds a lot to the team. But it's not like he has a unique skill set. There are other guys. And these are the guys that always wind up getting overpaid in free agency, because teams like guys like this, and they are valuable, but it's not as rare as somebody who can score a lot or, you know, a right shot defenseman, you know, like it's not a unicorn. The idea of a winger who works hard and can score 20 goals.
I would agree. I would just say his even strength goals over the last 2 years compared to what we would consider, you know, the medium to high end goal scorers. He's right there with him, but I agree. We do fall in love. Part of the reason why we fall in love with Zach Hyman is he plays differently than so many of the other players on this team that it stands out. Also, he's a guy that wants to be here and he'll sacrifice and every attribute we love about him. I think he is the highest end grit guy you can find, because he'll get you, you know, he can coexist with Matthews, but he also could drive the third line.
So the third line is an interesting point, because you could reasonably say Zach Hyman has played with a lot of good players, and that probably has fluffed up his numbers. I mean, yeah. what gritty winger? I mean, you know, Dave Semenko had a lot of points playing next to Gretzky. You don't have to be good to score or to have points when you're playing with offensive geniuses. But he did look really good on the third line. Now, you wouldn't spend that kind of money on a third. It's funny, right? Like, can you get away with less? Because you wouldn't spend that kind of money on a third line winger. And you don't really need to spend that kind of money on a guy who could play on the first line. So could you have two good players for the amount of money that someone's going to pay Hyman to do one job?
That's Kyle Dubas' job, is to find those two guys that the money you would have spent on Hyman.
Janssen and Kapanen were supposed to provide forward depth, and neither one did. And they clearly lost faith in them both, because we've seen how they'll have faith in certain players. But they cut bait on those guys pretty fast. So, you know, and with the Kerfoot question that's floating around, like, you know, if he gets, I don't see it happening, but if he gets offered up to expansion, that's one less reasonably good forward that you have. Their forward depth's not great. You know, and that's the thing that I think worries us about Hyman, because correctly, we're sort of like, he's one of a few guys who are actually good outside of that core four. Can we really afford to lose them?
Yeah, but they can't afford. The problem is they can't afford to keep them.
Right.
And it's not like the pipeline is filled with all these forwards ready to step in. And for that, you know, I go back, Brian Burke, Lamarillo, Nonis, John Ferguson Jr., and now Dubas, not the best draft record.
This is the thing. This actually brings me to a broader point that I want to get to. A crazy Macko and Cause big question theory I want to throw out there, but not before we finish talking about the Leafs. Because I have a question about how much it should matter if a guy wants to stay and is willing to take a little less. That's true of Hyman, although it sounds like he's probably gone. But it may be more true of Morgan Rielly, because reports indicate he's probably willing to take, you know, a hit to stay in Toronto versus what he might get out there. Is that a good enough reason to sign him, because you can get a good player for less than you might otherwise pay? Like, would you keep him just because he's willing to make himself a bargain?
Yes, actually, I would. And by the way, on my show the other day, I said the most important thing is to figure out Morgan Rielly. You either trade him now for a ready-made forward or for picks and prospects, or if you do keep him, it's going to have to be on a team-friendly deal. Team-friendly means the PA and the agent ain't happy, but there we go. If you could, you know, four-year deal where it's around the money he's making, five-year deal, yeah, I would do something like that, because he still is a top-four forward, and that's the money you get.
Yeah, and the funny thing about that is, it kind of suggests if you're willing to do that, then you believe in the core of the team. And yes, that the performance last season was a bit of an outlier, that they were basically some bad luck away from going on a little playoff run, maybe even a deep one. But if you are willing to get rid of Hyman, okay. But if you basically say, we're keeping our core four, we're bringing back Morgan Rielly, what you're really saying to the fan base is, and internally, with good goaltending and a little bit of tweak here and there, we're basically a cup contender.
What you're saying,
I don't know if that's true.
I don't think it is true. I think there has to be some shakeup. But I mean, like, if Morgan can come back for a good term and a reasonable contract, I think you do it. Then maybe you look at moving Marner. I mean, if you bring everyone back, what you're saying is that Matthews will be better than the guy who scored, like, you know, has not scored at the same pace in the regular season as he does in the playoffs. And same thing with Marner.
Yeah, the Marner thing's interesting. And the point has been made on this pod and lots of other places that there's kind of an analogy to Ben Simmons with the Sixers.
Yep.
In that you've got an all-world talent that seems to have holes, and you're not sure if those things can be fixed. And they're holes that really stand out in the playoffs. I was thinking about how Ben Simmons, initially there was talk about maybe he could get dealt for Harden, which is about as big a player as you could possibly trade for in the NBA. This summer, after that collapse, you know, you're hearing names like Bradley Beal and Damian Lillard, and those are really good players, like excellent all-NBA caliber players. If he stinks again this year and he's back with the Sixers, then you're going to look at next year at like, can we get a Buddy Hield?
Yeah, it's true.
Right. And I kind of feel that way. Like we're at the beginning of that with Marner. And if you believe in him, great. But if you're not sure, another shitty playoff performance could be the difference between saying, we're going to go get a Bradley Beal for this guy and we're going to get a Buddy Hield for this guy.
That's a hell of a drop off. And Matthews, 13 goals in 32 playoff games. That's a lot of minutes and a lot of power play. Only 13 goals. Marner, 20 total points in 32 games. Only 5 goals in 32. No goal in his last 18 playoff games. That right there is why they didn't get past Columbus, why they didn't get past Montreal, why they didn't beat Boston in a game 7.
I don't, the organization has been so clear about wanting to defeat blue and white disease that you can't just come to Toronto and think you're special because you're part of Toronto and how this has affected so many players. If this doesn't work out, I think we can accuse Shanahan and Dubas of having blue and white disease, that somehow their plan was so sound that it could not fail. We're bordering on arrogance right now. Now, it could just be seen as resilience or resolve at this point, because maybe there are a few more kicks at the can left in this. But we are really on the cusp of this idea that you can't bust up the core four. We're this close to it being arrogance.
I have no problem, I guess, with the exception of Matthews. I have no problem now if you broke it up, if you traded one, it has to be a hell of a haul. It can't be one where the majority fans, media, and, you know, shadowy GMs who speak off the record say, ooh, Leafs got hosed here. But if there is a fair deal out there, my heart is open.
We talked about Nexus events in sports the other day, and Aaron Schmeling, who listens to the podcast, said he wanted to hear more of them. And so I started just goofing around on Google, just thinking, what could be one? And would the San Diego-Toronto trade from back in 1990 count as a Nexus event? And I decided no, because it didn't shake up baseball enough. It just shook up our organization. That's just, it's too small to be a Nexus event. But I was looking at the deal. And sometimes when you look at it on paper, you forget because it's part of Toronto lore. But God, that was a big deal. McGriff and Fernandez for Alomar and Carter. Woo! 4 amazing players got moved at once. And if you would have said to me in 1989, should they trade Fred McGriff? I would have been like, what are you, nuts? The crime dog? He's amazing. But they made it work. And actually, they did the breakdown for San Diego. And even though it was clearly better for Toronto in terms of the players they received, San Diego actually did really well. And in terms of wins above replacement versus money spent, they're almost identical for that trade. It's a huge trade that worked out for both teams, or at least was quality for both teams. I'm not against that for the Leafs. Like when people say you can't do this, no, it's hard to do this. You can't trade Mitch Marner. No, it's hard to trade Mitch Marner, but not impossible. But if you tell yourself it can't be done, well, then it can't be done.
Can't add anything to that, Bob. You're 100% right. And I like just can't versus impossible. You're right. We, in our heads, we convince ourselves, wait, that can't happen, until it does happen. And yes, the Leafs have to be intellectually and emotionally honest on it, and they have to be flexible on this. They haven't done enough winning to be rigid. Tampa can be rigid. The Leafs cannot be.
I think you have to win a playoff round before you can really dig in your heels.
Yes.
I do think a new goalie is the right way to go, not just in hockey sense, but even trying to convince the fan base that this team will be different. It's hard to convince a team that has most of its important players coming back that this is a retool or a rethink. And just running the team back, nobody seems satisfied with that idea. With the exception of trading one of the core four, the only two things that can make people feel like change is afoot is new coach or new goalie.
Yeah.
It ain't going to be coach.
God, this is going to be hard for Dubas. Just
insanely hard.
Can you find players that push Mikheyev and Engvall down, maybe to the fourth line? Can you replace Hyman? Where do you get the goalie? What happens if it's Kerfoot? But by the way, I've heard it is like from and this is just me listening and reading the little Bruns and the Dreggers of the world. And everyone I ask, who do you think Seattle's going to take? Everyone says it's going to be Kerfoot, that it's not going to be Travis Dermott.
I've heard Kerfoot a lot. I've also heard Hall, although I can't see that happening. The Kerfoot thing gives you a little bit of cap flexibility because it takes his number off your books.
But you got to replace it.
That's it. Like, he's a functional to pretty darn good winger, and he could even play top 6 minutes, you know, if he had to. You know, they're pretty talent poor, which is crazy to say, considering that we were so convinced they were talent rich only 12 months ago. But I don't know if they can afford to give up a pretty good player right now.
But the funny thing is about the Kerfoot, listen, he's gone. Now you got more money to play with. That's the same thing as someone who bought their home in 2003 and they've made a tidy, you know, $500,000 profit. Now go buy a new home. That profit's gone bye-bye as well. It's great to say my house is worth this much. Okay, asshole, how much is the cost of the one you're buying?
How many people say, I couldn't afford the house I live in if I had to try and buy it right now?
Everyone.
Which is such a weird thought, but it's totally true. And it's actually a brilliant analogy, Matt. Bravo to you. The other thing that Dubas is fighting, and this may not be a hockey thing as much as a perception thing, but we were all excited by the players they brought in. Simmons seemed interesting. Thornton might work out. VC could have had potential. They took flyers on a bunch of guys, and none of them really panned out. Some panned out during the year. Thornton had his moments, although he tailed off. But in the playoffs, other than Jason Spezza, there were none of these guys that were brought in that really had any impact. In fact, if anything, they seemed to hurt. So if you go out and get a whole bunch of fringe players that look like he didn't find a Corey Perry. Maybe it's just luck. I don't know. What makes Corey Perry so much better than Wayne Simmons? I don't know. But the point is, those kinds of moves are not going to satisfy people because we're all going to point back to last year and say, oh, great, another jumbo. Oh, great, another Wayne Simmons.
Well, the problem is, much like the socks and underwear we buy, it's hard to find the 8-pack of underwear that's going to actually be quality and survive for, you know, 6 months. Same thing with when you go dumpster diving, when you go looking for value and bargains, there's a reason why that expression, you get what you pay for, you get why it exists. Because usually, you get what you pay for, which was very little in the postseason.
You like Glengarry Glen Ross, right, Matt?
Love it.
Right. So remember when they tell Jack Lemmon, go work the leads?
The leads are weak. The leads are weak. You're weak.
And you just know that to play it by the system, like, the leads are weak. Jack Lemmon can't sell to any of those people because they're not going to be customers. The leads are shit. And that's kind of how I feel about most of free agency. Is anybody that the teams haven't signed up is either really unhappy or really not that good, and the teams don't want them anymore.
So, Bob, what you're saying is that we need Kyle Dubas to be Alec Baldwin. The leads are weak. You're weak. I could go tonight with these leads and make $10,000. Can you? What's your name? What's your name? Dave Nonis? Fuck you. You see this free agent, Bob? Do you see this free agent? This free agent scored 9 goals in the playoffs with my team. You got one of those?
So he sits down Nylander, Marner, and Matthews and says, guys, first prize, $100 million contract. Second prize, set of steak knives. Third prize, you're fired.
No. Third prize, you're traded to Buffalo.
It's firing's too good for you.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a hockey theory, and I want to make sure we get to it. So can I throw this out?
One more.
Okay.
In honor of Kucherov and Tampa succeeding and the Leafs don't, in the corner, Mitch Marner picks up a Bud Light. Put that Bud Light down.
Bud Light is for champions. Yeah, there you go. Nice. I'll tell you what, Matty. I'll save my crazy theory for the end because we got some other stuff to get to, and we're already 25 minutes in, and I feel like the Jays deserve some conversation. So do you mind if I just switch gears to the Jays?
You better, because I'm going to continue doing Glengarry Glen Ross, and that needs to stop.
I don't know. I was kind of enjoying it, though. So, second half, which isn't really a half, but the second half starts up. And the Jays play the Sox, two out of their first four series, to start things off. And they're behind the Sox, and they have gone 2-5 in extra inning games and 6-10 in one-run games. And yet, they actually have a better run differential than the Sox do. So what is clearly letting them down is pitching in close situations.
Yes.
You talk to experts all the time, and I don't know how to put this delicately, so let me just say it the way I think it. Are they going to make a fucking deal for some pitching?
I think they are. They already made that one deal where they traded Rowdy Tellez for a decent bullpen arm, whose name, unfortunately, escapes me. But that's the thing about new bullpen arms. No one knows their names. They signed Ryu 2 years ago. They signed Springer this last year. They've shown they will spend money. The concern I have is how many other teams in baseball consider themselves true contenders. So once again, going to the real estate thing, that 800 square foot home with no basement, how is that going for $1.3 million? Oh, yeah, that's because 10 teams in the AL think they're contenders. That's my concern. Okay.
If you were the brass, you know, we'll say from club president on up, how much would you be paying attention to the Ontario government's decision whether or not to let them play in Toronto at Rogers Centre based on how willing you are to go in on this year? Because there is a possibility if they did go in on this year, they may not be able to play those games in Toronto.
That
might be a Buffalo series.
Yeah, well, at the very least, it might not be July 30th. It might be August 20th. So then you just do the math of how much money are we still losing by not getting any sort of home gate.
And are you better off keeping your powder dry because you've got an awfully young core that is poised to be challengers for a number of years, but those are all kinds of, like, you're not turning those successes into dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, and with the Delta variant on the rise, I know that we're all ready to put it in the rear view, but it isn't in the rear view. And there's an entire possibility that fall could be different than summer is. Hopefully not. Please God, not. But it could be. And if you're the Jays brass, you're sitting there going, shit, like, do we really want to go in now thinking we might not even have any home dates in September?
That's the one side of the coin. The other is, the Jays were the only team to have three starters in the All-Star game. Plus, they had Bo Bichette. Vlad is the second best. Vlad's the best pure hitter in baseball. Shohei Ohtani's just the best player in baseball. He's the best hitter as well. Anyway, do you want to waste all that young talent?
But are you wasting them by waiting a year? And I'm not advocating for this. I'm actually wondering, literally wondering. They're 19-20 at home because they don't have a home.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not so far out of a wild card spot. I think they're 4.5 behind Oakland for a wild card spot. I think that's where they sit right now. But regardless, maybe if they're playing in Toronto and they actually have fans cheering for them, that's worth two or three wins. I don't know. Those kinds of things always seem a little hard to quantify. But I don't think playing in Buffalo is helping. And clearly they have a subpar home record. So I don't know if they're not going to get that competitive advantage back this year. How much do you invest in this team? You know, absolutely. The Raptors checked out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they did. The Jays would be better if they're at Skydome. They would have more wins. They would not be three games over 500. I think it's worth at least two or three more wins for this team. And you're right. That's about management doing the calculus, but maybe you bring in more players. Because if you go on a playoff run this year, it helps sell tickets for next year. We remember 2017, the Jays missed the playoffs. They had a really bad year, but they had good attendance because everyone was buying tickets and season tickets in 15 and 16. And 17, it was like, everyone got stuck with the bill and the lights were on.
With Ryu or Ray on the mound, wouldn't you love to go see this team play live?
Yes. Alec Manoah on the mound, I think at this point I'd go see live.
So the appetite is there, but there just may not be a chance of cashing in on it. And in the end, Rogers has clearly shown that the bottom line is what matters most to them. Yeah, you can't blame them. They're a business. They're a business. Mm-hmm. And this is a weird, crazy situation. Don't we feel you know, with regards to Toronto teams coming back home, like Masai hasn't signed. And don't you wonder at least a little bit in your mind, he's trying to see, are we playing in Toronto or not next year before he commits to next year?
Well, certainly in the press, his closing press conference, that was a big focus, is about just how the Raptors got treated and not being at home. That was definitely a big theme in that presser.
I don't know how much the league likes having Masai in Toronto. I'm sure the public face of it is they love the fact that he's building up a place that's outside of this, you know, the country, because it's good for the international scope. But you think they wouldn't rather have him steering the Knicks with all the cash that would make for everybody?
Oh, God, yeah.
Right. So I wonder in some ways if this wasn't one of those coded messages through a press conference, you know, holding Adam Silver's feet to the fire, saying, you know, don't F with me here. Like, Toronto has to come back. And that's his way of saying to, like, his bosses, you know, the board, you better make this happen because we're not doing this again.
It's still the biggest question is Masai, but that's another topic. To end it, I do think the Jays are going to, they've already made one deal. I think they'll go after others. I think they'll target the Pittsburghs of the world and find the baseball teams who are in smaller markets with less money coming their way. And I think the Jays will make another move or two.
Just on the spirit of teams coming back home, what are you hearing about the CFL?
Oh, it's all the games for the first 2 weeks are going to be in Alberta, Saskatchewan, or Manitoba. They can have 100% fans as long as you can prove that you are vaccinated, which means get to the ballpark early. It's going to take you a while to get in. And then starting week three, you'll see some home games in Toronto and eventually Montreal and BC with Hamilton. I think their first home game is the Labor Day game. As of now, and with TFC, they're getting 7,000 fans on Saturday. As of right now, there is optimism because unlike the Jays with the CFL games, it's not going to be American teams crossing the border. So I think you're going to see crowds all across Canada starting in August.
I can't wait to see some of those conversations between Alberta CFL fans and people screening for vaccines.
Hey, you want to see Bo Levi Mitchell get the shot?
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the campaign in Alberta that they should have run the whole time.
You mean do you want to do
Jeff Pollock? I got a bunch of random questions for you. Many non-sports.
Yes. Ooh, absolutely. The sponsor for this podcast is Jeff Pollock. He is our lawyer. If you need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. He's been our lawyer for well over a year. And not only does he bring expertise and just a guy who's there for you, but you will feel good. And if you have any insecurity about getting legal representation, he will destroy it. He will eradicate any sort of fear you have about having a lawyer. Also, it's just cool to say, oh yeah, my lawyer. It makes you sound like an adult. The phone number is 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. And yes, I don't think I ever sound more like an adult when I say, oh, I was talking with my lawyer the other day. It's basically all I got. So yeah, jeffpollock.com.
It's like having a new toothbrush.
It just makes
you feel like a grown-up when you can say, I have a lawyer.
Yeah.
My underwear don't have holes in them. My socks cost over $16.
Whoa.
Seriously, right? Like, I see these $20 pairs of socks. I'm like, you can get four pairs for that money. Five, six pairs. Yeah, and then they got holes in them in 2 weeks. Okay. I got a bunch of combination between pick'ems and rank'ems, okay?
Do it.
What's more obnoxious? This is a pick'em. Wine snobs or music snobs?
Well, clearly it's you know what? I'm going to go with the wine snob because I think wine makes people more insecure than music. I think there's more human beings on the planet that feel they have at least a tertiary level of music knowledge. That number for wine knowledge is less. So the wine snob is worse because all it does is alienate people that maybe are interested in wine, but then they get scared off by the jackasses.
All right, I'm going to answer this, and I'm going to follow your lead of self-hate since I'm a music snob to a certain degree. Music snobs are worse, and here's why. Because wine snobs advocate for something that's delicious.
Yep.
They look down on things that aren't, you know, really classy, but at least they're advocating for quality, right?
Yes.
I grew up a musician. I played in bands. I made a living as a musician. I trained to be a classical musician. I've been around this all my life, and I am a bit of a music snob. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, a lot of the things that people say, oh, you have to listen to this or this is so good, is shit. And a lot of the stuff that most people like, whether it's Led Zeppelin or Britney Spears, is actually way better. But people like to feel special, like, oh, I've got this new sound, you know, this new thing, and it's all the guitars are fed through, a dehumidifier, and, you know, it's not that good. It's transparently just there to make yourself feel cool. So I would say music snobs are worse because they look down on people, and I'm not convinced their taste is any better.
I like it. Yeah, I mean, usually the quote-unquote wine snob, they're like, don't drink this mass-produced wine. There's a lot of chemicals and sugar in it. Drink this wine over here. I will defend myself in saying I don't think I am a wine snob. There's lots of box wine I like. There's wines under $10 that I will advocate. And, you know, even if it's a wine I don't like, if at least if it's like, okay, this is well made, but not for me, you know, it's like WandaVision. Actually, no, WandaVision wasn't well made. Bad analogy. But I will advocate for inexpensive wine all the time.
And similarly, I would say, all the people who turn their noses up at Led Zeppelin are missing the point. Led Zeppelin's better than whatever band you think is better than them. They're not. Yep. They're the best.
Yep.
And just because, you know, hundreds of millions of people like their music doesn't mean somehow it's lost its quality. They just get it. So I would say music snobs are worse. Okay, ready? This one, yep. I'm not saying has anything to do with me. What's worse for a grown-up, not knowing how to drive or being useless at tech?
Up till about 7-8 years ago, I would say the driving one. Now it's the tech one, with so many different ways to get from point A to point B with, you know, public transportation. You might not like it, but there's more of it out there. There's at least more bike lanes now than there was in the 90s. And not being able to get by with tech. I mean, think about how it's going to hurt you. You've got to show proof of your vaccination. Oh, it's on your phone. Well, how do I get a PDF on my phone? What the hell's a PDF? So I think, Bob, you've survived. You survived the era where you needed to drive. Still shameful. But I think what's worse for an adult is I think it's now tech.
I couldn't agree more. And we have an antiquated notion of driving. It's almost like your bar mitzvah or something. It's the moment where you become an adult. And to not do it suggests that not even just that you're in a state of arrested adolescence, it's more that you're not qualified to be an adult. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's true anymore. But where people really look down on you is when they say, can you scan this barcode? And you're like, I don't know how. Not understanding how tech works is way more alienating in today's world than not driving. Way
yes.
more.
Yeah. Ironic, talking about being able to work tech, you can't work the mute on your phone.
Yeah. See, and it makes me look like an idiot, right? But Matt, you know I can't drive anywhere. You're tired of shaming me about that. And frankly, that has nothing to do with you, but how many times does my tech ignorance, I work for Apple, God bless, I work for a tech company. Yeah. Maybe I don't know how to do anything. I know how to operate the internal Zoom. That's it.
That's enough. Yeah. By the way, you might want to keep that quiet about the whole tech thing. But Bob, the only thing I'll push back on, I'll never get tired of finding creative ways of shaming you for never driving.
Charlotte is now she's working with you. She's like your Robin. You're the Batman. She's the Robin. Oh my God. You know what she did the other day? How bad she burned me? Did I tell you the Dora burn?
No.
So I stand up and I walk to the kitchen and I hear behind me for no apparent reason, hola, soy Dora. Can you help me find the big man?
Could be worse. She could have said grande man.
Yeah, it could have been worse, but, you know, it wasn't great. Okay, I'm going to do a rank 'em and then I'm going to go back to a pick 'em. Okay, so today, Friday, July the 16th, we are entering a new phase of opening. Mm-hmm. What rank them in terms of what you're most excited about?
Easy.
Wait, let me finish. Indoor dining.
Yeah.
Movie theaters. Or the greater possibility that you can start working at work again.
Okay. I thought you were going to say gyms.
And I'm like, no, it's not going to be gyms for you because you got a gym in your place. I had it and I thought it's a guaranteed third because you work out at home.
Yeah, exactly. I'm most excited about the movie theater.
Really?
Like, yep. I am most excited about the movie theater. That it represents one of the ultimate forms of normalcy. Amy and I, we go to movies like once a week. And we've been going to movies like once a week since we started dating, like back in like 2007-ish. Movies are first. I will go works. You see, it's tough because at least with restaurants, I can do the outdoor dining. So I'll do going back to work. I'll do indoor dining, but that's tight. Those two are really tight for one another. In the summer, I can say work second, indoor dining third, because I can eat outdoors. Ask me in December, and it might flip.
I thought you would have said indoor dining above movie theaters, but you know, those are good answers. So here's mine, and I realized how sad this is. Number one is working at work. Then it would be movie theaters, and then it would be indoor dining. I'm not a big restaurant guy. I mean, I like takeout and everything, but it's just, I didn't grow up in a house where we went and ate in restaurants very often.
Yeah.
And it never became part of my social life. You know, for some people, it's a huge part of their social life. Maybe because I never really dated. I just didn't get used to going out to restaurants, like, or even bars. Like, when I went to bars, it was because usually I was playing. And when I went to restaurants, I was, you know, I was broke and then I was married. Like, I didn't really have a social life in restaurants. But working at work, I don't know if this is like a sad commentary on how people view work, but I'm tired of Zoom calls. And I'm mostly tired of not being able to just sit down and look someone in the eye and say, how do you think we should do this? I'm tired of everything being so scheduled. Sorry, I'm getting a bunch of texts. I'm just, you know, I work on a team for the last year helping Strombo put his show up for Apple. And I haven't met half the team yet.
Yeah.
It's weird. And I think, like, wow, I'm getting a lot of texts. I better learn to drive because this tech thing isn't working out. I just miss it. I miss people. I miss people. Yeah. And I think actually one thing that this taught us was, as much as people said, I don't need to go to work, it's where we have most of our social interactions once you become past a certain point as an adult. And I miss people.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I miss people as well. I miss the bouncing ideas off of other producers, other hosts, just other people around at TSN. And also, I'm lucky enough that I don't have a crazy commute. So it's easier for me than, say, someone who lives like in Milton. So it's easier for me to make my way into the office.
Yeah, the commute, I'm sure a lot of people won't miss. And there's more and more people who have to do it. So that part's true. But
yeah,
you know, even just like a hybrid system where you're in half the time and home half the time would be better. Okay, so we talked about movie theaters. That was your number one. What is the first movie you plan to see in the theater?
And maybe just because it's getting advertised, Quiet Place Part 2.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, it is available right now on Amazon Prime at home.
I do not have Amazon Prime.
It's actually a good service. You should get it.
I've never ordered anything on Amazon.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So,
But you drive.
That is true. I think it's just because, you know, the thing is, because I'm not handy and I live in a condo. When you live in a condo, you don't need as many things to, you know, to fix your home, your basement, your yard, your whatever. And because I'm just not a handy guy, I don't really buy many things. I don't buy many clothes, certainly less now than I did in my 20s and early to mid 30s. Like, the main thing I buy would be going out for restaurants and wine. And those things I don't need Amazon for.
It's a great point. You're not really a stuff guy. You don't like gadgets. You're not a fix-it guy. You're not a clothes horse.
Nope.
So all these things that people usually go looking for, you're not a collector of any sort. You don't really have hobbies where you acquire things. You tend to have hobbies where you do things. And those things tend to be pretty lo-fi. Like, you've run plenty of marathons, but what do you need? You need a pair of shoes and maybe a treadmill, and you got one.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, so Quiet Place, I mean, there's no wrong answer. And that was, I think, the first movie to crack 100 million in 2021. Oh, nice. I'm going Black Widow.
Yep, that'd be there as well. I haven't seen the Rotten Tomatoes score. Again, as we've talked about, the previews don't underwhelm me, but I'll still go see it.
I was going to order it the other day on Disney Plus, and you know, it's like $30 or whatever, but you know, not any different than going to a movie and getting some popcorn. So I thought, okay, cool. But then I thought, do I really want to watch this on my TV?
Yeah.
Don't these movies need to be consumed in a theater to really get the experience? I mean, that was the one thing about Loki that I kind of wish. I mean, it wasn't like a whiz-bang spectacle, but I kind of wish I could have seen some of it, especially in the finale, on a big screen. I think it would have looked really cool.
And also, it's so hard to give 100% focus when you're at home, when you have all these other devices and time suck and attention seeking things. But when you're in the movie theater, it's more intimate. It's you and the screen, unless you are the horrible human being that needs to be shot in a catapult who still checks their phone in a movie theater.
Going back a few years, I saw the movie Hereditary and was really affected by it. I thought, oh, wow, that was really good, Matt. Don't scare me. Even just doing that's freaking me out. Stop it. I'm going to turn up my laptop, drown it out with the sounds of tweets and bells and stuff. I don't think I would have had that experience. Oh, God, you scared me. I'm freaked out, man. I don't think I would have had that experience watching it at home, though. It was so much more immersive in the theater. And yeah, that clicking sound that you made, that is probably going to make me cry and barf. I don't know if it would have had the same impact at home, because you can kind of walk away a little bit at home, too.
Yep.
You know, like you're a bit of a captive. And for that kind of experience, like in a horror movie, you want to feel trapped. And it's hard to feel trapped at home.
I always said the highest compliment I can give a movie is I watched it at home and I didn't do anything else but watch the movie.
Yeah. That's why I like to watch movies on planes. I just find I pay attention to them. And yeah, also being in the plane makes everything good.
It's true.
Watching in the afternoon and watching on a plane makes everything good.
Yes. 100%.
So I'm thinking Black Widow. You're thinking Quiet Place Part 2. Yep. I got a question that came in from Buffalo Phil, who follows the show.
Out there.
All right. So one's hockey, one's basketball, and they're both famous pairings and who you would start a team around. Would you start a team around Kobe and LeBron or Jordan and Shaq?
Jordan and Shaq.
Me too. What's your thinking?
Yeah. Now, Kobe, incredible player, but sometimes a little too much hero ball. You know, when they won one of the titles against Boston, when Ron Artest hit the crazy shot, he was like 8 of 24. I know I'm not getting I'm not getting LeBron. That's fine. But, you know, I'm getting Jordan. And if I can pick my Shaq, you know, give me like young Shaq or playoff Lakers Shaq. Yeah, I'm taking Shaq and Jordan over LeBron and Kobe. That one's easy. That one's not even hard.
I agree. The single best player in that list is Jordan, and the single most underrated player on that list is Shaq. Shaq in his prime was literally unstoppable. Yep. In a way that nobody has been since Wilt Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the league conspired to keep him from scoring 50 to 60 a game.
They felt bad. The league felt bad for the people defending him.
The rest of the league were getting participant ribbons. Okay, so here's a hockey one. Would you start a team around Gretzky and McDavid or Lemieux and Crosby?
Gretzky and who?
McDavid.
Oh, Gretzky and McDavid.
Yeah, by the way, that's a pretty solid answer why you picked it when you're not sure who the second guy was versus Lemieux and Crosby. It's pretty high praise of Gretzky.
Yeah, I'm still doing that. That one, by the way, that one is closer than the basketball one, but I'm still taking Gretzky and McDavid.
You know, me too. And the thing that I like about that, and it's obviously not a knock against Lemieux and Crosby,
no,
but McDavid is so incredibly fast, not just north-south, but also east-west. And what makes him so amazing is that his eyes and his feet and his hands can all operate at the same speed. But nobody's brain was faster than Gretzky, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just the ability to set up stuff for a guy who can outspeed everybody. God, can you imagine how dynamic they could be? Just as a dynamic duo.
Yeah, Gretzky would have 200 assists.
I have a question about Nexus events. I was asked to come up with one. I want to ask you if you think this was one. The sad day when we found out that Junior Seau took his own life.
Yeah.
And then the subsequent knowledge that he experienced brain trauma and that there were signs of CTE. And the noose was closing around the NFL between, you know, all the dots were starting to connect. And the thing about the Junior Seau was, here was a guy who was all pro, who was loved, who was kind of held up as the model of a football player, and his end was so awful and tragic that for a lot of people, it sort of crystallized what was being said in one person's story. does that qualify as the kind of event that changed sports after it?
I think so, because the other stories usually involved a member of the 70s Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, the Hall of Famer, Webster, the center. There was Dave Dorson, the former safety of the Bears. But now Junior Seau, you know, and it's in some ways this is ghoulish to say, but it's not just about, you know, someone dying. It's about specifically who's the person that sort of galvanizes things. And with Seau, yeah, like that story was very public. And this was this energetic feel, like just filled with life person that was so much part of our lives. So yeah, that is a good one. I think at the very least we could say that was the tipping point on the concussion conversation.
Do you find now, you and I went through this being on the air, so we talked about this a lot more than the average sports fan would. You and I talked about this every day for a while, pretty much.
Yeah.
Concussions and how they play out. Do you feel now when you watch that you think about it, or has the idea of concussions been so baked into your brain now that you watch and it's changed how you observe things? Like you don't have to consciously think about headshots. You're just already thinking about them.
I would say that, you know, still when you see the guy knocked out or the woozy guy, that's the thing that's changed the most. Back in the day, it's like, oh, he got his bell rung, ding, ding, ding. Or, hey, look at that running back. He's going to the wrong sideline. Whoa. Now it's, I hope he's okay. And has someone contacted their family?
I've been wondering when I watch hockey about how I expect the game to be now. Because I was always an advocate of physical play. And I never want to be a hypocrite and say I didn't like fighting, because I did like fighting. And when it started to go out of the game, I don't feel like I needed to save it for my entertainment purposes, or, you know, this was a culture we're trying to preserve. I kind of listened to the players when they said we need it in the game, but the players ultimately were wrong who said that. But I did like the physicality. Like, hockey was a pretty brutal sport. You know, it wasn't quite a boxing or UFC, but even maybe more so than football. It was just insane. Like the great poet Al Pretty once said, it's a combination between murder and ballet. And I like that about it. And so when I watch the game now, it's not that I find it soft necessarily, but I kind of miss the hate. And I wonder if those two things go together. You know, as you diminish the physicality, you diminish the animosity.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's funny. We focus on why is the game softer? Why is everyone getting along? And we usually focus on, well, they're making so much more money, or they all hang out with each other. And obviously those are big parts of it. But in others, you're right. The game is not as... there's less headshots, there's less dirty goonery going on. And so that means that it's going to be a reduction in animosity.
And the guys who still carry on those characteristics, you know, the Tom Wilsons of the world, are fewer and farther between all the time.
Yes.
And I'm not sure that they're ever going to be out of the game altogether, because obviously it's a physical game and it's better to be tough than not. But they just don't hurt each other anymore. And there was kind of an expectation when I was growing up watching hockey that guys weren't necessarily against hurting each other. That's a weird thought in 2021, that players would not feel shamed or horrified by a guy who didn't care that much about hurting the other team.
Yeah, it's different now. I think it's the big thing is just the headshot. That is something that you see players openly condemning other players when they do it.
Yeah, and it's all part and parcel of the same thing, and it's inevitable. It's inevitable for financial reasons. It's also inevitable that we just culturally, once we were made more aware of the ramifications of these actions, just got harder and harder to support it.
Yeah.
I still watch UFC though. Honestly, I still watch UFC. And, you know, when I found out that Conor McGregor had a broken leg, I rushed to go see, can I find a clip of it? Like, I don't want to be a hypocrite. You know, I'm still drawn to that kind of stuff, but I don't know. Okay, so we'll call it a Nexus event then. We're almost out of time, buddy.
Oh, I was about to say, we're at 56 minutes.
All right, well, what's your week like next week? When do you want to try to reconvene?
Should be a little bit easier. This last week I was babysitting my nephews and a lot of driving them around, plus doing the show, plus, you know, writing some articles. But next week will be a little bit more, I think we'll be a little bit more stable than this week.
All right, well, hopefully pretty soon, if you watch Quiet Place, we can do a postmortem on it. I'll watch it at home. You watch it in the theater, and we can finally start talking about movies again.
And we'll do Loki.
You know, I got a lot of thoughts about Loki, and I will say this, this is not a spoiler. I'm not going to tell you how you should watch it, but I was very happy with how it ended.
Can't wait.
Yeah. It was really special.
All right. Well, I can't wait for Loki. I can't wait to talk to you next. Enjoy NBA and the Jays are back, and I'll talk to you next week. Ch-ch-ca.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.